Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 4. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about discipline, and you mentioned Jagger, your fellow recruit, who wasn't.
He resented discipline because he'd been brought up with a gypsy family, that was very independent sort of a lad. And he could never understand orders that didn't seem to have any reason for them. Just, you know, like making a bed up again because the officer didn't think it was done right, and you couldn't improve on it yourself. And I remember one day the sergeant told him to lay down his bed. And Jagger argued with him, his bed was as good as it could be made. So the sergeant knocked it all off, you know, the lot off, and said, "Now get started now." And Jagger threw him all over the hut. He'd obviously trained as a, I don't know, a wrestler or something, but he really threw this sergeant about the hut. Of course, he'd run a charge for him. But we all said, well, the sergeant started it. So he got a reprimand from the officer in charge, but he didn't go any further. But Sergeant Smith never, ever got into Jagger again.
So the sergeant was actually intimidated by that?
He was, definitely. I've never seen anybody. We learnt in iron combat, but not to the right extent that Jagger could do it.
And what was his punishment if he was put on a charge? What would that mean?
He just got a reprimand. I mean, it was only an initial training, so things went. But the officer, he obviously knew that the sergeant had the mark of his attitude.
What about your NCOs in terms of how they treated you as recruits? What about the use of language? Was that a... Other veterans have talked about, you know, lots of four-letter words and so on.
Yeah.
What do you feel about that?
Well, it was really something to understand it. I mean, all right, it still works. Men swore. Four-letter words weren't unusual, but not to another person. You know, we talk about the effing slugs not winning very well today if you were on the blast furnaces, or having gas meters not work. But I mean, you didn't effing blind to each other in a personal sort of a way, which they did in the army, the NCOs. They called you bastards. You know, and a lot of people resented it, because they weren't used to it, but it's just something that eventually you just accepted it. You know? I don't think really it was meant in a nasty sort of way. It was just a way that NCOs had got into to see how important they were. I don't think men really resented it.
So within your squad, training squad, you more or less all knuckled under to.
We quite well.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you go through the first half of the day. What would happen after that?
In the afternoon, it would be another sort of training, marching backwards and forwards on the parade ground, or maybe running around the parade ground for fitness, or maybe go to the gym. Different days you did different things, but you knew what you was going to do. You knew that on Wednesday afternoon you had 2 hours in the gym with the PT instructors. Wednesday morning, you maybe had an hour's running around the field, which was the back of the camp, to get fit. But you knew what you was going to do day to day. You know, you could say, "Oh, bloody hell, Wednesday, we're going to run that." And that's what they did.
So, during the early period, it was mainly drill. When did you finally start to learn weapons training? When did that come in?
After about the first 5 or 6 weeks, we were introduced to the Leonfield and the Benwell. We set in the... That's Jeff Mayfield, another, had been in the TA, you know, territory. And then we went in, and we obviously stripped the bungalow down before. And Sergeant Smith got the engine and stripped it down and then reassembled it, and then he said, "You can do it." and there's a lot of evidence he pointed to Mayfield. And Mayfield come, took it down and stripped it and put it back again and couldn't understand it then. So everybody had a laugh. But Sergeant Smith took it in the right. He said, now when you can all do that, we get it somewhere. Same with the Lee Enfield. Mayfield had already obviously had used the Lee Enfield. That's the first time I've ever seen a rifle, and I haven't. All the Bremen. But we all had to strip it down and put it back together. And that's what we did, but maybe all morning. And you go right through Lifterton and everybody was, if you made a mistake, then you made a mistake. But the town you'd finished, you had to be able to do it. Strip a bangle down. I mean, there's nothing to a Leon for your rifle, it's just the bolt is at the back of the falls and bullet gives it the barrel, isn't it? But the bangle is, I forget how it needs to get down 7 or 8 pieces. So you know, you had to learn to do it.
And were you assigned your own rifle at this stage?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And
I can't remember the alpha number.
But it, so it would have a specific number?
It would have a specific number and you're responsible for it.
Now, how long was it before you actually learned to shoot the thing then? How long did that take?
Well, I should think it was two and a half months before I went to a rifle range.
So you were just learning to disassemble it and reassemble
it? Put it back together and load it, unload it. Four times for inspection. But before I think it was two and a half months before I actually found one.
And obviously you'll be using these when you're on the parade ground. You'll be
there's part and parcel of you.
And you mentioned route marches. Had you started route marches?
Yeah, we started route marching the first week we was in camp. The first week was in the army.
And how far was your first route march?
First route march was 3 miles. And the last mile was post march. It was in Lincoln itself, in the high street, within the streets. And the post march was, you run 100, you run from one lamppost to the next, and then you march to the next, and then you run. And that's how we did.
And on these route marches at this stage, would you have...
Full kit.
What would full kit be?
2 pouches with ammunition. In our case, while I was in Lincoln, we never had any ammunition. We had just the full pouches with, put some weight in them. And have a sack on your back, a small haversack. And you'd march. We used to march 50 minutes and a 10 minutes break. And at the 10 minutes break, there was a medical order. If you had any trouble with your feet, you know, blisters, they would come and inspect your feet and do CT blisters. And then we'd do another 50 minutes and 10 minutes break. And the 10 minutes break, they used to, you'd be having talked about your rifle or the Bren gun or aircraft recognition. We got that as well. You had to be able to recognise off a diagram of the wall, you know, if it focused the wolf or the diagram of the. But they were sort of intermingled with your route march. Just for briefing up, you know, getting people to the could recognise them.
So how did your feet hold up on the route marches?
But, my feet have never been very good in boots. When I bought new shoes as a young man, the younger brother always wore my shoes for the first month to bed them in. So I suffered agony with 2 new pairs of boots. Because we had 2 pairs, we had to break them both in. And my feet suffered.
So you had blisters?
Blisters.
Mm-hmm. What about the rest of the squad? How did they, what was the
team? Well, some were the same as me. I mean, Jeff Mayfield never wore a pair of boots in his life. I'd always wore boots. But there was better boots than, there was different to the army boots. There was a softer leather at the top because we found it was a leather worker and he finally bought boots and he softened them. Just put your boots on, stand in hot water for a couple of hours, so that the boots shaped his feet. And then he would let him dry naturally. But then in the army, you had to put new boots on him. And the worst thing of it, if you couldn't darn a pair of socks, then you suffered.
Why?
Because most young men cobbled them. If there was a hole, they cobbled it together. And it's where the joint was like a rough cut. And it was.
So darning was a special.
Yeah, well, you had a darning kit. Your housewife was your darning. I mean, someone did learn to darn.
What about, I mean, you'd been issued with all of this kit,
yeah.
And this is still in your very early period in the army, you'd been issued with all of this material. Did any of it go missing? And how did you respond when it went missing?
Well, you'd been somebody else's.
And was that common? That so how would you try and safeguard against that?
Well, you had to put your kit out of the way. But it was you had no lockers. It wasn't locked up in it was in your kit bag. Or it was on your bed, generally. Anyway, it wasn't unusual for you to go on. My razor was used more by other people than ever I used it in Lincoln, because I didn't shave. I wasn't going beard. I mean, a fellow like Tom would be darker and most probably had to shave when he was a young man, a really young man. But I never did. I didn't start shaving when I was in my 20s. So my razor was often somebody else had borrowed it, and especially razor blades, because there was the old razors with a, I think I still got it upstairs.
Where you clipped in the blade?
The blade went in and we stored it up again with the handle. But we, as a platoon, we worked very well together. If you went on parade and your boots weren't up to standard, you'd borrow somebody else's boots, which was very good if you were on guard duty. And the first thing you did if you went on guard duty, you was inspected by an officer. Your rifles were looked at to make sure they was clean. Your kit was in your blanco, because you had to blanco your weapon. And it had to be clean. It had to be up to date, up to standard with that officer. So you maybe borrow somebody else's boots to go on parade with, and then the first chance you got, you change back to your own boots and keep them boots. They were special, they were well polished, the toe caps had been boned.
Was there special techniques of
boning?
Cleaning your boots and cleaning.
Yeah, the toe caps was polished, really highly polished. And some of the sweats showed us how to do it.
Which is what?
Spit and polish, get blacking, spit on you, rub it on, and then sometimes you just burn it with a candle. And then you rub it again. And then you get the back of the toothbrush and bone it until they're really polished up. And as I say, when he went on parade, you'd get the best boots in the barracks if you could get them on. And use them when you were inspected, and then change back to your own boots later on.
So you'd already been assigned guard duties at this point?
We did guard duties. I think within. Well, I was in Lincoln Barracks.
Well, what did you guard?
Lincoln Barracks, but with no ammunition. Was stood outside Lincoln Barracks on guard duty, and we had a bloody bullet between us.
And did you have, I mean, other veterans have talked about the so-called stick man, where you had a guard and the one man that would get off it because he was
the best.
Did you have that at this stage?
Yeah. And that bloke become guard orderly. It was his duty to fetch the food, you know, from the mess. For the guard, which consisted of a meal and some tea.
Did you ever get the stick?
Never. Never got the stick once.
What about other men in your platoon, in your squad, in your platoon?
Well, we always had Clem, the stick man, and they dressed in everybody's the best of everybody's uniform. Because Clem was Billy Gilchrist on guard duty. Clem was. If you had Clem on guard with you, you made sure he got the stick job. Because all he had to do was to go to the canteen and mess around and fetch the food and make sure that the palliasses was all right. You know, he looked after the guard room itself, not the guard.
And so you would ensure that he was better turned out than the rest of you, so that you
And I think the officer knew that he was. The officers, most of them were called up same as we were. And they knew, you know, that Clem was a bit thick, given the least dangerous job there is. So if his stick man, once the guy's been inspected, nobody saw him over Clem, because he could go to bed. He could go to sleep. Once he provided supper, went to and did any room about for the officer, who was, you know, in charge of, sergeant who was in charge of the guard, Clem could go to bed.
What about you, the officers that you had at this stage? What did you think about them and their style? How are they different from the NCOs in terms of?
Well, they were different in the respect that they were nearly all better. They had a better class upbringing, you know, that they were more educated. All of them were working class sort of thing. I mean, we had one officer who was. Webster, he was through the ranks, and he was a good officer because he knew how the rank and file was, and he treated him accordingly when he got to be an officer. The same with the captain we had later on, Captain Finney. He'd been made up from the ranks, and they were the best officers as far as training went. But some of the other blokes, they were in the army because they had to be the same as we were. And they were quite good. Same as that mate, you know, mentioned it. He was a good officer in England because he looked after himself, and in doing so, he looked after Christmas too.
Yeah, that's somebody in the Sherwood Forest, isn't it? We'll talk about that in due course. Now, you're in the army, you're in the Lincolnshire Regiment. Had they tried to instill a sense of regimental identity. Was there any of that going on?
Yeah. We learned all about they called the Lincolnshire Regiment the Yellow Bellies. Now it wasn't a derogatory term. It was called the Yellow Bellies because originally the Lincolnshire Regiment wore a yellow waistcoat. And that's how. But when I first went into the army and the we met other companies, well, they lived as the Yellow Bellies. Yeah, Yellow Bellies meant it was cowards. But the Lincolns were called Yellow Bellies because originally, when they were the first one, they were the Yellow Waistcoat.
And so, was this, did you have a class where they taught
you? Yeah, they were cowards.
What else did they tell you about the Lincolnshire Regiment?
They were one of the finest regiments in the British Army. But every regiment was worthy. You know, and they learnt the regiment song.
And what was that?
Lincolnshire Poetry.
Can you remember how it goes?
When I was born a prentice in famous Lincolnshire, well I knew my master, and that's how it went. And we learnt it right through. And when I was on the route march, we used to sing it.
And can you remember any of the other songs that you sang on the route marches?
And laugh or be talk to what a delightful smell. And we used to learn that to. Yeah, banner with the strange divine. You pay the IDI. We used to master that as well.
And.
We always sang when we were on the route march.
And so, at this early stage, that would take your day. Yeah. That would fill your day. What about what time would your army day end, and what would you do after
that?
Well,
the first 6 weeks we weren't allowed out of barracks. After 6 weeks, you could go down into Lincoln, and you had to be back by midnight. And you was always inspected before you was allowed out about. There'd always be a sergeant or a sergeant major at the gates going out to Lincoln Barracks. And if he thought you weren't dressed properly, for any reason, he would send you back in.
And so what would help?
Well, that, if he said, you ain't got your gaiters on properly, you could go back and adjust them and put them on properly. And you, as long as you passed the inspection, going out, you were all right. But if you didn't pass, you went back, you weren't allowed out.
And what else that what else could go wrong in terms of...
Well, you haven't got your Glengarry on properly, or your berry, because some wore Glengarry, some wore berries. Your cat badge is not clean enough. Now, some of the time, that you were sent back deliberately to discipline, you know. You can't do just as you like, you've got to be spot on. But I mean, a lot of the things was... I think the idea was that so many men would be refused, you know, won't let to go out for discipline, no other reason.
And so what could you do in Lincoln? What kind of place was that at this time during the war?
Well, during the war there was different... There was all the organisations like British Legion, Sally Army, Catholic Club, nearly all the churches and that end. And a place where you could go very often getting the meal. You could always get beans on, you had to pay for it, right? You could always get beans on toast on the bean. You could go into a snooker hall. You could go to a pub, but we never had enough money really to go to a pub. What we called a pub? Bone and chain. Anyway, there's pubs you could go into, but the only thing is, the pub, if you went into a pub, you could nearly gamble, you'd meet some of the NCOs from your regiment, you know, and they didn't encourage you to go into the pubs where they were. So
why didn't they like that?
Well, because they were showing up, I don't know. They didn't want us to see how they acted in a pub. Discipline again, you see.
So would all of your friends would be fellow recruits? You wouldn't have... Did you know anybody else from Scunthorpe, you know, that had joined earlier on than you?
Never caught up with anybody.
So it was everybody was just in that group?
Just in that group. Mm-hmm. And usually you stuck to your own platoon. You very seldom went out with a man from... The only time you went out with a man from another platoon was if you did know him. I did know him, actually, now I come to think of it. Henry Beedham. He was in the same induction as me, but he was in a different platoon. And we both lived in Scunthorpe. And the way we got home to Scunthorpe, weekends we could come home if you had no other duties. If you were off duty, you could come home. Not officially, but they didn't bother if you did. So we often used to catch you at Brayford, at Lincoln was a dock, Brayford Docks. And they loaded petrol, Shell petrol was loaded up there. And very often you could get, and there was a Shell depot at Gunners, which was, you get on the Shell and they'd drop you off in Scunthorpe, because you just bypassed Scunthorpe. And that trunk road going down to Gunns. You could never get a ride all the way home. But you couldn't get one back, because you used to go back on a Sunday night, so you had to make your own way back. And I had a friend who had a three-wheel Morgan, and he would take us back on a Sunday night. And we were once going back on a Sunday night, a three-wheel Morgan, frosty, and then the back wheel, it was a back-wheel drive. And we couldn't get up that last one, because of the... He just couldn't get enough grip to go up the hill. We couldn't even get it up if the three of us got out, so we had to come back into Scunthorpe and hire a taxi. And we just got back to Lincoln before 12 o'clock.
And what did your friend do that had the Morgan? Because it's quite a sporty car, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he went into the RAF later on.
Now, So eventually they did allow it to fire the rifle. Could you
Yes,
just describe
on the
how,
range.
just describe the process of that?
Well, first of all, you had to practice. This was the first time when I went on the range. You all had your own rifle, and you were given a clip of 5 rounds, and you had to stand in front of a sergeant or a corporal, load it, and then when you load it in, the clip flies out. You had to pick the clip up and get down in the firing position, and then you would lay down, and the target's 300 yards, and you don't fire until I give you the command, and you fire one round, and the man at that end with a flag will show you where your bullet's gone, and you'll fire 5 rounds, and each time you fire, I tell you, you don't fire individually. So there might be seven targets, seven men made in a line, and above each man would be an NCO, and you'd fire, and they'd show you where you're firing on the target, and they'd say, really useless. Very good. I was quite good with a rifle. I got to be a sniper eventually. Then you had a different rifle, a sniper rifle. But it was all good fun. And I think that's what we thought it was, a lot of good fun. We didn't realise that we were going to be going into a bloody place where people were going to be firing back at us. It was an enjoyable experience in a lot of ways.
Did you ever have like a sweepstakes? With the veterans, we talked about sweepstakes on
No.
the results of the range.
The only sweepstakes I had was between the sergeants in charge of different platoons. It was, if our sergeant, it's right, above a man, we're firing again, such and such a platoon. That was only sweep. We didn't have a sweepstake. Individuals in the platoon. It was always against another platoon.
How did you fare against the other platoons?
Oh, we did. On an average, it was an all-average place, really. The only time we did, Mayfield, as I say, he'd been used to a rifle. I was a decent shot, and we had another lad called Taylor, who'd been a poacher. Now they could shoot, because they'd been used to guns. And if we had them three, if those three was in the first shoot, we always had a start. And we did fairly well. But it was only, but there was always somebody in their platoon, what was, in the Home Guard, well, not the Home Guard, but some of these cadet forces would learn to handle. Because first time you fire a rifle, they tell you to pull it well into your shoulder. The trouble was, when a person pulls it 9 times out of 10 before you fire it, you ease it away from your shoulder. So that when you pull the trigger, it bounced back into your shoulder, and your bullet didn't go where it was supposed to go.
What did you think of the Lee Enfield? So it was easy to handle, didn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And you've mentioned that you had already been introduced to the Bren gun, to strip the Bren gun down and so on. You were firing the Bren gun at this stage as well.
Yeah.
And did they
not at the same day, but the same week in your training, sort of thing.
And how did that weapon compare? Was there a different technique of firing it, or
no, the same technique. You got down in the firing position. The Bren gun has two legs at the front. Legs down, pull it into your, you always have to pull them into your shoulder to sights up. And the advantage you had was you knew the distance from where you were firing to the target, which is a big advantage because you knew where your sights wanted to be.
So they told you how far it was all the time?
That's a 200 yard comeback, this is 300 yards. So, but you always knew the distance, so you could sight better.
Could you just explain what that meant in terms of the different weapons? What the sight was?
Well, the sight is the back sight on the rifle stood popped up, and the front sight was fixed on the end of the barrel.